From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today we begin with this press conference at the White House Thursday.
The stock market's up again, and we're very close to a new high. It would be over 100 times, I believe. You'll check it, but many, many times we set the record. So we're very honored by that. We're having a tremendous couple of weeks. A lot of good things are happening. I got a call from heads of China. The call was directed to my people, actually, and they asked whether or not it would be possible to delay the hit on the tariffs up to 30% from 25%. Would it be possible to take it off of the October 1st date? We gave them a two-week in honor of President Xi. We gave them a two-week reprieve. And so we'll be doing the tariffs on October 15th instead of October 5th or 1st. They were going to be set on October 1st. We're moving it to October 15th because they're having their 70th anniversary. And I will do that again in honor of President Xi. And that's it. Any questions? No, I wouldn't. I think he's fantastic. But I actually spoke to Mike Pompeo about that, and he decided, and he and I get along with him so well. We have a lot of the same views and a couple of little different views, but he likes the idea of having somebody in there with him, and I do too. I think that we'll have an answer for you. We have 15 candidates. Everybody wants it badly, as you can imagine, and we'll probably next week sometime make that decision. We look forward to that. We have at least 10 more. A lot of people want the job, and it's a great job. It's great because it's a lot of fun to work with Donald Trump, and it's very easy, actually, to work with him. You know why it's easy? Because I make all the decisions, and I have to work.
What's your message to the people of Baltimore now as you head to Baltimore?
Well, I look forward. We're going to Baltimore right now. I look forward to it. We're going to be with the Republican congressman, and I think it's going to be a very successful evening. We had a tremendous election on Tuesday, and you saw the results on Tuesday night. One gentleman was Dan Bishop. He was not doing so well 3 or 4 weeks ago. We got the message out. He won the election. He was losing substantially, and he ended up winning fairly easily. That's Dan Bishop. And Greg Murphy won by a lot more than it was expected. He won by many points, and a lot of people thought that was going to be a close race. So we won two seats in Congress on Thursday, and I guess the press didn't talk about it too much. They would have if they lost, but they won. The Republicans had a great night on Tuesday.
Considering any kind of interim deal with the Chinese, where they make a commitment on intellectual property?
Well, it's something that people talk about. I'd rather get the whole deal done. We've taken in many, many billions of dollars of tariffs. I'd rather get the entire Chinese done. Look, if we're going to do the deal, let's get it done. A lot of people are talking about it. I see a lot of analysts are saying an interim deal, meaning we'll do pieces of it, the easy ones first. But there's no easy or hard. There's a deal or there's not a deal. But it's something we would consider, I guess. But we're doing very well. I did a little bit of a delay in honor of President Xi because it's their 70th anniversary in China. Well, it's too bad. I'm going to miss it. I'm going to have it somehow taped. I didn't even tell him about that, so maybe it's not that important, but it is important. Look, it's going to be very interesting. I look forward to going home. I'm going to have to watch it as a rerun because many of you are coming to Baltimore with me. I don't expect too much difference. I mean, you have three people that are leading. I sort of think that those three people are going to take it to the end. It's going to be one of those three, I think. But you never know in politics, do we? You know better than I. You never know in politics.
Mr. President, who do you think the strongest opponent is?
I think, you know, look, they all have their weaknesses and their strengths. I think that they're very different. You certainly have a lot of different voices up there. But it would look to me like it would be Elizabeth Warren. And it looks like Joe maybe will be able to get there. Maybe not. I don't know. And certainly Bernie is there. He's number three. But I think that's because they're so far in the lead, the three of them. And if you remember, I'm sure you forget my Republican primaries, but I went to the lead at the very beginning and stayed there. It's, you know, if you don't make a really major mistake, he should be able to make it. I would imagine Biden would be able to make it if he doesn't make any major mistakes.
We'll see what happens. Has he made any progress on guns? The man
that you called my African-American at your rally in 2015, he says he's leaving the Republican Party because you're pursuing a pro-white agenda. What's your reaction to
that? Go ahead. What?
What do you say to him? What do you say to him? He used to be a supporter of yours. He's a supporter of yours that you see, and he's not anymore.
I don't know who you're talking about.
He's the man that you pointed out at the rally called My African American.
I don't know. We have tremendous African American support. I would say I'm at my all-time high. I don't think I've ever had the support that I've had now. And I think I'm going to do very well with African American. African American support has been the best we've had, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that from employment and unemployment, both employment and unemployment.
Do you think he's wrong that you're pursuing?
Well, I think this. It's very simple. We have the best numbers we've ever had for African Americans in terms of employment and unemployment. So I think we're going to do very well.
Have you made any decisions on guns or ethanol today?
So we had a big meeting on guns, and we had a big meeting on ethanol. We had a great meeting with Chuck Grassley, Joni Ernst, Mike Rounds. We had Kim was there, Iowa. Kim was there. We had some terrific people, John Thune. We had a meeting on ethanol. We had a meeting on guns separately and different people. And I think we made some good progress on background checks and guns. I think we had a great meeting on ethanol for the farmers. I think we had our ethanol meeting was a great meeting. Let's see what happens. But there's been nobody better to farmers than Donald Trump that I could tell. I think we made a lot of progress on ethanol, and I think we made a lot of progress on guns. Yes.
Do you meet Kim Jong-un sometime this year, Mr. President?
At some point, yes. He will. Certainly, they want to meet. They'd like to meet. I think it's something that will happen, and we'll see. But Kim Jong-un. I think something can happen, yeah.
Military construction fund. Senator Fitzgerald says you're putting national security at risk, and Democrats are calling for a vote to overturn the national emergency. What's your response to that?
So the wall is being built. We need the wall for purposes of national security. The military is behind it all the way. Any project that they may delay a little bit, it's only a delay. They'll get built. But the wall is something that we need. We're going to be building hundreds of miles of walls. We had, as you know, a Supreme Court decision, which was outstanding. We also had a Supreme Court decision yesterday on asylum. And that was a very, very big decision. And it was a 7-2 decision. The asylum decision was very big. But we had a very good decision on the wall and wall funding. And the wall is going up as we speak. We intend to have approximately, you know, maybe something short of 500 miles of wall. That would be almost everything that we need. About 500 miles is what we need, and we're going to be very close to that by the end of next year.
The impeachment investigation, are you concerned at all?
No, I'm not. We've done the best job of any president in 2.5 years of in office. Our economy is incredible. Rules, regulations, everything that we've rolled back have really led to a resurgent economy. If you look at all of the things we've done for the military, if you look at what we've done for the vets, if you look at everything we've done from an economic standpoint to a national security standpoint, I think our country is in one of the best conditions that it's ever been in. I think the economy may be the strongest it's ever been in the history of our country. And people know we're doing a great job. They do play politics, and they continue to play politics. And a lot of people think that's the only way. But you know what? Most people think that helps me. It's really an embarrassment to our country. We've done a great job. Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. President, Kim Jong-un wants new conditions for negotiation with the United States. Are you accepting new conditions for the negotiation?
Well, we're going to see. I think that North Korea would like to meet. I think you probably have heard that. I can tell you that Iran wants to meet and China wants to make a deal. So we have a lot of interesting things going on. Well, I haven't seen the Andrew McCabe situation. I really don't know about it yet. I heard it was big news before, but I have not been able to find out exactly what happened with Andrew McCabe. Something happened that was very big. It was just breaking as I was walked out. But I haven't seen it yet, David.
Mr. President, what exactly have you and the First Lady told Barron about vaping?
We haven't told him anything except don't vape. Don't vape. We don't like vaping.
Do you think Nancy Pelosi is scared to admit you?
I don't think she's scared of anything. I think she's a smart woman, and I think she knows exactly what she's doing. We have the strongest economy in the history of our country. We're about ready to break the record again on stock market. We've broken the record on jobs. African American, we just broke the record again. You know that. If you look at Hispanic American, Asian American, the best employment and unemployment numbers in the history of our country. With women, we're at 71%, 71 years. Think of this, 71 years, the best numbers in 71 years. No, I think we've done a great job. There are those that say the best job in the history of our country for the first 2.5 years. So pretty much that's the story. So we had a big meeting today on guns. We had a big meeting today on ethanol. Both meetings went very well. A lot of progress was made, I believe, on the background checks and various things having to do with guns. We're dealing with the Democrats, and I think we're dealing very well. It seems like they'd like to do something, and I think that I can speak for Republicans. They'd like to do something. We'll see what can happen, but we're always protecting our Second Amendment. I want to make it clear. Our Second Amendment will be protected fully. Say it. Well, we're dealing on Venezuela right now. It's going to be a very interesting period of time. We're also trying to help a lot of Venezuelans are dying. They have no food, they have no water. And we are trying to help. A lot of them have escaped, so to speak, into Colombia and different places. We're trying to help those people that have been able to get out. But we are dealing with a lot of things having to do with Venezuela. My attitude on Venezuela is a very tough one. And frankly, my attitude on Cuba is a very tough one. And in a way, they go hand in hand because Cuba has always made it possible for Venezuela to do what they're doing. And frankly, that's ending now. And likewise, Venezuela, through the oil, took care of Cuba. A lot of that is ending right now.
Have you seen any evidence that the Israelis have been spying on you and the White House?
I don't believe that. No, I don't think the Israelis were spying on us. I really would find that hard to believe. My relationship with Israel has been great. You look at Golan Heights, you look at Jerusalem with moving the embassy to Jerusalem, becoming the capital. You look at even the Iran deal, what's happened with Iran. Iran is a much different country right now than it was 2.5 years ago. It's in a much different position. No, I don't believe that. I wouldn't believe that story. Anything's possible, but I don't believe it.
Are there any Democrats debating tonight you absolutely respect?
I respect all of them.
All of them?
I respect everyone. Let me tell you, it takes a lot of courage to run for office. I respect all of them. See that? I'm getting to be much better as a politician. You never thought you'd hear that answer. No. I think so. It depends really on the Democrats. It depends on whether or not the Democrats want to take your guns away, because there's a possibility that this is just a ploy to take your guns away or whether or not it's meaningful. If it's meaningful, we'll make a deal. If this is a movement by the Democrats to take your guns away, then it's never going to happen because we're never going to let that happen. We will always be there for our Second Amendment. So we're going to see. If the Democrats want to make a deal, we can make a deal. Thank you, everybody.
We now go to our weekly drop-in at UN headquarters in New York City, beginning with comments to the media from Secretary General Antonio Guterres and Miguel Moratinos, the High Representative of the UN for the Alliance of Civilizations.
Today, we are launching an important new effort to tackle hate and violence around the globe. It is called the United Nations Plan of Action to Safeguard Religious Sites. And we are doing so for a reason that is both deeply unfortunate and absolutely necessary. Our world is plagued with a surge in anti-Semitism, anti-Muslim hatred, attacks against Christians and other religious groups. In recent months alone, Jews have been murdered in synagogues, Muslims gunned down in mosques, Christians killed at prayer. I once again condemn these attacks in the strongest possible terms. Religious sites should be places of worship, not places of war. In the wake of the Christchurch mosque massacre, I went to the Islamic Center here in New York and made a global call to reaffirm the sanctity of all places of worship and the safety of all worshippers. And I then asked the High Representative of the United Nations Alliance of Civilizations, Miguel Ángel Moratinos, to develop an action plan for the UN to be fully engaged in support of safeguarding religious sites. Since then, he and his team have been reaching out far and wide to governments and religious leaders, to faith-based organizations and civil society, to young people, traditional and social media, the private sector, and beyond. And the plan of action is the product of that work. It is rooted in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and grounded in a core understanding. Religious sites are powerful symbols of our collective consciousness. When they are attacked, so too are the very pillars of society. The plan offers concrete recommendations to support countries in promoting safety of holy sites, ensuring that worshippers can observe their rituals in peace, and fostering the values of compassion and tolerance. Unfortunately, religious sites have increasingly been targeted in situations of armed conflict. Let me emphasize that buildings dedicated to religion are specifically protected by international humanitarian law, and intentionally attacking them could be a war crime. Beyond the target of religious sites, loathsome rhetoric is also spreading like wildfire. And this includes hate speech targeting not only religious groups, but also migrants, minorities, and refugees, assertions of white supremacy, a resurgence of neo-Nazi ideology, venom directed at anyone considered the so-called other. When people are attacked because of their religion or beliefs, we are all diminished. When political figures are at fuel to the wildfire, we are all threatened. And this is why the plan of action released today is complemented by the strategy on hate speech that we launched in June. Taken together, these plans provide mutually reinforcing new tools to combat intolerance and promote peaceful coexistence. People everywhere must be allowed to observe and practice their faiths in peace. With this plan of action, the United Nations is taking an important step to advance that fundamental goal. Hatred is a threat to everyone, and so this must be a job for everyone. The world must step up to stamp out anti-Semitism, anti-Muslim hatred, persecution of Christians, and all other forms of racism, xenophobia, discrimination, and incitement. Thank you, and I'm...
Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary General Edith Lederer from the Associated Press. We all know that climate change is going to be one of the biggest issues at the UN General Assembly gathering starting very soon. One of the other big issues that we will all be watching is the possibility of any kind of meetings and talks between the leaders of the United States and Iran. How important is this for world peace, and what are you doing and the United States doing to possibly help facilitate this?
Well, first of all, in relation to climate change, I will be flying tomorrow to the Bahamas in order to express my deep solidarity to the people of the Bahamas that was victim, as you know, of a terrible hurricane just a few days ago. Now, in relation to the possibility of an encounter between the President of the United States and Iran, I have no particular insight in relation to that. What we have been saying time and time again is that it is absolutely essential to avoid any escalation of the situation in the Gulf, and that the world cannot live with a major confrontation in the Gulf. So any effort that might be made in order to avoid it will always be welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary General. It's Pamela Falk from CBS News. To further ask on climate, what is the support that you are receiving from emissions contributing, the major emission contributing countries, and what do you expect to do in the Bahamas that will discuss climate change or resilience for island countries? Thank you.
Well, first of all, we have invited member states to come to the climate summit to commit themselves to an increased ambition in relation to the objectives that were defined during the pledges made in Paris. I think we have now the best available science saying that we should limit the temperature growth during this century to 1.5 degrees Celsius, and that to achieve that, we need to have carbon neutrality in 2050, and we need to have a very meaningful reduction of carbon emissions in 2030. So my appeal is for the largest possible number of countries to be able to commit during this summit not only to carbon neutrality as soon as possible, but also to review with much more ambition the so-called national determined contributions, the pledges made in Paris in order to reduce emissions or to improve adaptation. And at the same time, I hope that this summit will allow us to have a stronger commitment of the developed world in relation to support the developing world in both mitigation and adaptation. I'm very grateful to a number of countries that have already announced doubling their contributions to the Green Climate Fund, and I hope that this summit will be the occasion for that to be enhanced.
And on the Bahamas?
In relation to the Bahamas, obviously there is an objective of solidarity with the people that has suffered enormously, and there is an objective of raising awareness to the international community to increase the support to the Bahamas people and to the Bahamas government in the present situation. And at the same time, I think it is a clear illustration, if we add the Bahamas to what has happened in Mozambique, to the drought in the Sahel, to the fires in the Amazon or in the Arctic, to the melting of glaciers, to the bleaching of corals, I think all this is a demonstration of what we have been saying in the recent past. Climate change is running faster than what we are, and we need to have a much more ambitious approach in what we do in order to defeat climate change.
James? Question on refugees, Secretary General. The US Supreme Court has temporarily backed the Trump administration in stopping people coming in from Central America. This comes as the Trump administration is also limiting people coming from where you're going, from the Bahamas, coming into the US. Your reaction?
Well, as you know, in the United Nations, the authority in refugees is the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. I was United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees for 10 years. And it happens that United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees already pronounced himself today on that. I want to say that I fully support the pronouncement of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees.
Thanks. Maggie.
Secretary General Margaret Bashir, Voice of America. On the new initiative you just announced, you talk about protecting, safeguarding religious sites, but worshippers as well. So what is your specific message then to China on the state of the Uyghurs?
Now, my specific message to all countries in the world is that religious freedom needs to be respected in all circumstances, and that in the context of religious freedom being fully respected, all religious sites must be protected.
Maria, last question.
Yeah, thank you. Secretary General, you are talking about protection of refugees, but also, like, I think about protection of all civilians, and the investigation you started in Idlib was about it.
Sorry?
I suppose. The question is about investigation committee in Idlib, in Syrian Idlib, for protecting all civilians there. So how soon do you expect this committee to start its work?
The Board of Inquiry will be announced very, very soon. I hope it will be this week.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
That's followed by a briefing from Monica Grayley, the spokesperson for the President of the UN General Assembly.
Good afternoon again. I know it's a busy day for everybody, so I will be brief. And afterwards, you guys have the stakeout at 12:30 with the Secretary General. But now let's go to the agenda of the PGAs for today. This afternoon, the President of the General Assembly will chair the last informal high-level event on gender equality for the current session. Ms. Maria Fernanda Espinosa will welcome the PGA-elect, Mr. Tijani Mohamed Bande, the Executive Director of UN Women, Ms. Pumzili Mlambo Nguka, and Ms. Susana Malcorra from Women Leaders, Voice for Change and Inclusion, and at the opening of the session, which begins today at 3 p.m. in the ECOSOC chamber, if you are interested in covering it this afternoon. The event Women in Power, Call to Action and Women Leaders, Voices for Change and Inclusion will have two panel discussions on synergies between global networks that encourage women's participation and support the sharing of knowledge and experience. This is our last informal meeting for this session. The first panel will be moderated by the Secretary General Envoy on Youth, Ms. Jayatma Rikmanayake, and will open for questions from the floor. The second panel will be moderated by Åsa Regner, UN Women Deputy Executive Director, and the entire event will be webcast for you on UN Web TV. More information on our website. And the PGA is joining celebrations on the United Nations Day for South-South Cooperation. This morning, her chef de cabinet, Ambassador Kwabena Osei-Dankwa, delivered a speech on behalf of Mrs. Pinosa's at the event to mark the day. The meeting was organized by the UN Office on South-South Cooperation in coordination with the chairs of the G77, Argentina, and others. Ms. Espinosa said that this day provides an opportunity to reflect on the transformations we have seen in the global South since the UN was created, when so many countries did not have a seat at the table, and since the Buenos Aires Plan of Action was adopted in 1978. Today, the Global South makes up the majority of the UN's membership and of the world's population. Its share of global wealth is now at 40% and estimated to rise by 55% by 2050. So the PGA believes that the South-South cooperation must be part of the answer, complemented by triangular cooperation, catalyzing change, boosting knowledge and know-how. Since 2016, the value of South-South trade has increased almost sevenfold, from $600 billion in 1995 to $4 trillion in 2016. During that period, exports grew at an annual average rate of 13%. And more information you can also find on www.un.org/pj/73. and the General Assembly has met this morning to consider several issues, including revitalization of the work of the GA cooperation between the United Nations and the Community of Portuguese-speaking Countries, CPOP, and advancement of women, the resolution on the scope, modalities, formats, and organization of the high-level meeting on the 25th anniversary of the 4th World Conference on Women, Beijing Plus 25. Thank you very much. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.